This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work Policy and Practice at the University of Chicago, where research meets real-world impact. The master's program in social work blends classroom learning with extensive field education guided by faculty known for groundbreaking research. Applications are open at crownschool.uchicago.edu/socialwork. Inspire change. Shape the future.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
The price of clothing, furniture, and some electronics has already increased, and consumers might feel the pinch on everyday goods even more when new tariffs take effect in August. But this hit to our wallets could be an opportunity to consider what we buy and from where. Do we really need to buy a new item? Could we buy used? What if we swapped items locally instead? I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. This approach is part of what's known as the circular economy, and Chicagoans have been working on the idea for a while. To learn more about how it works and how it could benefit you right now, I sat down with Jonathan Pereira, Executive Director of Plant Chicago. That's a business incubator and education center in Back of the Yards for companies in the circular economy. Bob Shea, Founding Director of Devices for the Disabled, which takes donated medical equipment, refurbishes it, and gives it to under- and uninsured Chicagoans. And Karen Weigert, Reset Sustainability Contributor. Karen started off by sharing her thoughts about the opportunity that this moment presents.
This idea that there are price signals now that might make it a little more expensive to get the things that we're easily used to getting, it opens the door to things already in our local economy. That's already in the U.S. So there are opportunities to actually save money and potentially grow the economy locally, while at the same time you're not dealing with the waste issue that nobody wants anyway. So it's a really interesting moment.
Yeah. How does this fit into the concept of anti-consumerism, Jonathan?
Well, a circular economy is really an answer to the opposite of a linear economy. Right now, our economy is highly efficient and focused on taking resources and materials out of the earth. So when you actually focus on making sure that outputs from one process go into another process, you are reducing reliance on virgin materials. So the more you can compost your food waste, right? Food waste makes up over 20% of the material we send to landfills in the Chicago region. The more you can focus on not just reducing, but refusing and reusing materials, repurposing materials, you are reducing reliance on extraction.
I want to make the distinction, too, between two terms you brought up, linear versus circular. For the person we might have lost already.
What's your
most concise definition of each?
Well, we break it down. A linear system is take, make, and dispose.
It's kind of what we know.
Yeah. We take materials out of the earth. We use petroleum products to make a single-use plastic water bottle. We use it once, and we throw it away. Or we recycle it, hoping it gets recycled, which we know it doesn't often happen, right? And there's a whole host of reasons that doesn't happen. But if you know, the simplest thing is a single-use or a multiple-use water bottle, right? Ancient technologies like forks that you reuse over and over again.
Ancient technologies, he says.
You know, glassware, cutlery that we don't use once, right? That we reuse over and over again. The technology, the practices are there. It's only in recent history that we started thinking we treated our economy and people as disposable.
Yeah. And you know what? We laugh, but Karen, when you think about it, at one point in this country, we had to be taught to throw things away, right? That things are disposable. So I'm thinking back to like decades ago with like milk bottles, for instance.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. When you think about the economy and the lifestyle that people had, say, 100 years ago, there was a lot of mending. There was a lot of food scraps become soup, or they become food for an animal.
Yeah, like I said, keeping your milk in, you know, glass bottles.
Exactly. Everything was was really expensive and everything was really precious and everything was really used and incorporated back into your local economy. So there wasn't this idea and there wasn't this price point, actually, where something could just be used once and thrown away. So it is a fundamentally different thing. And in the intervening decades, a lot has happened. And one of them is certainly the production of plastics, which do their job really well. Like, they don't break down in general.
Yeah. That's
part of why we have such a challenge with them. But we had collectively in the U.S. and in other places to learn what it meant to have disposable things. And there were some value propositions that we all heard about then. Convenience, that's a huge thing in mm-hmm. day-to-day life. But there was also a value proposition initially around hygiene, this idea that something had never been used before. So there was a lot that went in culturally into trying to make this transition happen through marketing and other things. But it was really enabled by the unbelievably low price points. When you have a factory that can produce plastics, it doesn't cost that much more to make another one. So you're doing right. volume.
But Bob, sometimes we get in scenarios where there's no good way of getting rid of things or getting what we need without having to get a new one. And I hear this was your experience when it comes to medical equipment. Tell us more.
I was diagnosed with a neurological disease, and this type of medical equipment, wheelchairs, walkers, it literally gives you your life back.
Mm-hmm.
And I also served on a board of a hospice. And when someone passed away, what happened to all that equipment? And there obviously are a lot of people in our society that don't have insurance for one reason or another or are underinsured. So my question was, well, why can't we take that equipment that somebody else used and repurpose it? And then that allows us to give it to people in need at no cost.
Tell us more about the business model there.
It's we take donated equipment. And it's typically someone who has gotten better and does not need the equipment, or it's somebody who has passed away in the family. Now, what do we do with that equipment? And organizations like Salvation Army, Catholic Charities, does not accept donations of that type of equipment.
Right.
And so there was this urban legend, you couldn't repurpose medical equipment. And
so you're filling a direct need.
It is. We work with the safety net hospitals and clinics here in Chicago so that a case manager or social worker can have somebody either discharged or somebody who needs the equipment. They can now turn to us and get what that patient needs. And it's no questions asked. They get it for no cost.
And talk me through the benefits on both sides here, both for the people who are doing the donating, right, and the folks receiving these items.
It's interesting. I understood the benefit to the person who gets the equipment. But a quick story, a couple lost their son, 15-year-old boy, and the father couldn't let go of the wheelchair. But just before the year anniversary of his passing, they heard of us. So on the anniversary, they took the wheelchair to the cemetery and told their boy what they were doing with the wheelchair, and then they brought it to us. And I took them out into the warehouse, and I said, every piece of equipment you see, there's a story. And I said, your son's wheelchair will profoundly touch somebody's life. You just created a legacy for that boy. And
wow.
Of course, there was lots of tears. The other side of the equation is there was a girl on the neighborhood on the south side called the East Side, and we see a lot of gunshot victims, and she was in the wrong place at the wrong time. Three bullets missed their target and hit her. She's now a quadriplegic on a ventilator. 3 weeks later, her mother delivered a baby girl. So her oldest was in the hospital paralyzed, and her youngest is in her arms, and the family didn't have insurance.
Mm.
So the University of Chicago Hospital reached out to us. And the mother had said, I can never cry in front of my daughter. I have to be strong for her. Her name was Tanya. And the day we brought the wheelchair in, the room was filled with doctors and nurses and therapists. And when we came in with the wheelchair, of course, all the clinical people went for the wheelchair. And I walked over. I have a scar on my neck where I was intubated. And I walked over and leaned down and I said, oh, Tanya. And I pointed at my neck. I said, I have my membership card. And she got a big smile on her face. And then I said, by the way, that wheelchair is for you. That's yours. The mother heard me, and she broke down crying. And then she said, my daughter will have a life.
Mm.
So a simple act of giving that wheelchair to us brought tears to that mother's eyes because her, and by the way, the epilogue to the story is Tanya is taking college classes now. She wants to work for DCFS to help other children who's gone through her. So it's just a
wonderful
cycle. And it all starts with that person donating a used piece of medical equipment.
What comes to mind for you when you hear stories like this, Karen? Because we can get so wrapped up in these linear economy versus circular economy conversations and what that has to do with goods. But there's that human piece, that human interaction piece that's really, really precious.
In a sense, that's the true story behind anything that we're talking about. It's whose life has been changed, either by being the giver or by being the receiver. And how have we cared for and stewarded the world around us? And these examples are just unbelievable because you could talk about the stats and the numbers and the landfill, but really the whole reason to do all of this is to have a thriving community, a place for all of us to live and have a pathway forward. And this example just takes all of the noise and all of the jargon and makes it real at its essence. It's about people.
Jonathan, talk to me about Plant Chicago and this very concept here, right? That nothing is wasted and everything is regenerated. How do you carry that out?
Absolutely. So it's interesting. We talk about like people are central to our work. When we talk about linear economies and circular economies, you know, people often focus on, hey, the material flows and the energy flows and you know, eyes glaze over. People, especially our mission is to cultivate local circular economies. So we are supporting our local, you know, economic system on the Southwest side. Mm-hmm. We not only offer locally and sustainably grown produce on a sliding scale and link match, but we also offer free food scrap drop off on the other side because there's always going to be plant material and we want to keep that material flowing to make sure that it gets composted and re-enters not just our environment safely, but our economy. There is an economy, a compost economy as well.
Yeah.
Not only do we offer workshops, right, but we on various, you know, free cooking demos on how to prepare this locally and sustainably produced food.
Wonderful.
We offer, you know, summer programming for youth. We have 18, 15-year-olds right now at the firehouse at 45th and Marshfield learning how to grow mushrooms, learning how to grow plants indoors in our indoor farm.
Let me call my daughter who's sitting on the couch right now and tell her to go join them.
yeah, we're going to do it every summer. We have programming year-round as well. So if there's teachers that are interested in something out of this world, learning how to keep materials out of the landfill and still grow food, Plant Chicago is a great place to do it.
Mm-hmm.
We have what I think is the only shared-use indoor farm in the city that's about to undergo a huge renovation. We're decarbonizing our building, meaning we're removing all of the direct use of gas in the building and replacing it with electric air source heat pumps, reducing our reliance on fossil fuels. It is a little bit ironic. We're located in a former firehouse. It feels like we're responding to a different type of emergency in the earth.
Yeah.
Recognizing that we can't keep consuming this earth. We have to work on replenishing it. And our focus really is back of the yards. And something that Karen said earlier that low-income communities and countries have been doing this out of necessity.
For a long
forever,
time.
Forever. And we'll continue to do so.
You do what you got to do.
So, you know, our work is really creating a hub to embrace that and make the implicit explicit.
This is about equity. On top of it, right? Because you're also making sure that the people who need items the most get them, similar to what Bob was just describing.
Yeah, actually, I mean, we have a monthly Mercado Intercambio, which is it's a market, right? We have small vendors, food vendors, farmers, crafts, but also we'll always have a swap station. And this last month, we actually had a medical device swap station where individuals could come and pick up wheelchairs. And we have, you know, similar thing where a whole family came and the grandfather got a wheelchair and a walker and some other supplies.
Yeah.
And those types of things, right, the materials that were dropped off may have seemed like, you know, had little value to the people that dropped them off, but they make an impact. And you do, you know, people see people breaking down sometimes mm-hmm. when these things that are little to us can have a big impact at others. And it has an economic impact. That was money saved. That's not recorded in our GDP. That's not recorded.
And as I said at the top, no time like the present to be trying to hold on to as much of your money as possible. So as Jonathan was alluding to there, Karen, in many ways, these are economic benefits that we've been discussing, social benefits too, but this also reduces waste. Tell us more.
Absolutely. At the biggest picture, something like 100 billion tons of materials come into our economy every year. So, you know, that's durable goods, that's food, that's everything that is being produced and flowing through the different parts of what we move through during the course of the day and what our economy moves through. The numbers are incredible. That also has implications not just for the physical waste, but for the energy to produce it, for the water to produce it. And so when we lengthen the life of something in our economy, we are reducing the need for those new inputs. There are estimates that something like up to 40% of greenhouse gas emissions could be eliminated if there were a scaling of a lot of these circular practices. So it's a really big question. It has implications for every part of the economy. And yet you can break it down and be really, really specific. And it can be something that you do today or tomorrow with something that's in your closet.
Yeah. I want to hear more from you, Bob, about how you refurbish this equipment and how you get it in the first place. Is it a lot of word of mouth in addition to the partnerships that you've developed with hospitals around town?
As far as receiving the equipment, it's word of mouth.
Yeah.
I mean, initially I thought there would be a 2-block long line of people looking for equipment and I'd have one walker in the warehouse, but I realized that there was a tsunami of equipment out there because there weren't places for people to donate this type of equipment. And so we all the time, people will say, oh my, I can't believe I found you. We looked and looked and there was no place willing to take this type of equipment.
And are you having to do sometimes little fixes once you receive them?
The first thing we do is we put them through a disinfecting process to make sure that they're safe. And then we have people go through to make sure that the equipment, if there's something needs to be replaced or something fixed. With a wheelchair, I always say, I make the analogy, it's like a man buying a suit, then he has to have it tailored.
Yeah.
And the same is true with a wheelchair. There's different size wheelchairs depending on the size of the person. But then you have to make all the adjustments so that it fits appropriately for the mm-hmm. person. And so it's those are all the things that are necessary to make sure that the person gets what they need.
What stands out to me on your website, Jonathan, you have sort of a section that talks about what you believe at Plant Chicago. Mm-hmm. Waste is an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me more. I love that. Waste is an opportunity. It is.
It is. And I think, you know, if you talk to anybody and maybe the World War II generation, you know, my father, for example, saves the screws, right? A lot of people throw those away. If I ever need to fix something, I ransack my father's
basement. My dad knows how to repurpose anything.
Yeah. So, you know, waste is really an action, right? We don't see value in something, and so we throw it away. And we've been lucky for a long time to have developed a system where, you know, municipalities take it away and take care of that for you.
Yeah.
Right. You put something out on the street and it goes away. I think in the area, according to Cook County, we have less than 11 years left of landfill space in the Chicago area. So we can't just keep throwing things away. The Midwest has benefited from more space where we just kind of find more places to put it. But we'll reach a point where we can't throw things away. So the opportunity really is when you have this thing that you think has no value, there is value somewhere else. The wheelchair, the crutches, we don't need it anymore, but there is value. The there is value in that food waste.
So if we get to the point where we can't throw things away, right? If we've just got 11 years of landfill space left, what do we do?
Well, some countries
for a friend.
Yeah. Some countries have taken to burning it for energy. You know, Northern Europe, there are some countries that actually rely on waste to do that. That's not ideal. You don't actually recapture that the materials in there. But that is an open question. But the more that we can rely, actually reduce, right, what we use, refuse in the first place.
Yeah.
Cut down the amount that we consume as individuals. Individuals aren't fully responsible for it. What we were talking about earlier, there's sort of a deluge of crutches out there, right? Hospitals will constantly give you a new one. Companies that produce plastic products constantly, there's a deluge, there's an overproduction of plastic, right? So the businesses need to figure out how they're not relying on production and selling
making
us more stuff.
Making more and making more, yeah.
Right? If that's the business model, I want to figure out how to sell you more stuff. That business model, we have to wean ourselves off of that addiction.
What do you say, Karen, to people who want to buy new items?
It's been really interesting to watch the growth in the elements of the economy, like the sharing economy, under a different title. Uber, we're sharing somebody's car. Airbnb, we're sharing somebody's home. So I think the creativity here is, how do we expand the opportunities in the economy so you can get what you need when you need it? And if you're an athlete and you need a new pair of tennis shoes, you actually do need a new pair of tennis shoes. So let's get that. Mm-hmm. Maybe those shoes could have recycled content in the sole. You know, so that you actually can solve the circularity question without you having to always buy a used thing. And that's what some of the creativity can get us to. So we're already living with the sharing economy in ways that nobody could have imagined a while ago. We just don't call it that. We just call it Uber.
Yeah.
Or we call it Airbnb.
That's
and
a good point.
Recycled content is in so many items today. It's a scale question.
Anything to add, Bob?
Well, unfortunately, I'm a lot older than them. So
that's a great thing.
Yes. What's the alternative? But it's not something that we have to invent. I remember as a kid, pop came in glass bottles and you got 2 cents to return the bottle.
Mm-hmm.
So you could bring your bottles back, or as a kid, you would go around and knock on people's doors and say, do you have any bottles? And they would give them to you. You'd take them in and get the 2 cents. So I grew up doing this. It's just we moved away from it. We just need to go back to that thought process that, don't throw the screws out. Put them in a jar. Everybody's dad had baby food jars with screws in the basement.
And some people's dads still have. I'm looking at you, Jonathan. Oh, my goodness. What about concerns about buying used?
I think there's less concern. I mean, many young people I talk to, I mean, my children, it's a little bit of a competition to find
it's
the
cool
clothing,
now.
Right?
It's
right.
Cool to thrift.
What can you find? So that's sort of one of the silver linings, I think, with tariffs is that it is at its heart kind of an it's a consumption tax.
Mm-hmm.
It is a consumption tax.
It's a tax
on the American people.
Uh-huh.
And silver lining and tariffs don't often land in the same sentence. So I need to hear more, Jonathan.
Yeah, and because it is going to push more people, I think, to look for used and to refurbish and become, you know, like rediscover these things. And it already is, right? This is not an argument for tariffs or a slapdash approach to it. But if you want to find a silver lining somewhere,
yeah.
I think, you know, there are already people that are, you know, they're looking for the used items.
Yeah.
And
we've talked about this on the program before, Karen, thrifting.
Absolutely.
It's the way to go.
It's the way to go. The coolness factor is fairly fun to see. And it's also, thrifting is just one piece of it. People are buying, selling, and renting clothing nationally through big companies. There are tech companies in the space. You can talk about ThredUp. It is really interesting to see that it can be something as simple as is you're actually able to know your neighbor, and maybe you garden together. Maybe you swap because your kids are the same age and you can swap clothes. There are companies that are going to help you do it.
Mm-hmm.
Does it scale everywhere? Not yet. But it's really interesting to see all these different ways, and additional price pressure from tariffs, you know, might unlock even more creativity.
Give us some more wisdom, Bob.
I was going to say, but how what goes around comes around.
Yeah.
It was my children who taught me about this thing called Marketplace and Craigslist.
Yeah.
Who knew? I used to look in the newspaper.
That's right.
And all of a sudden it was like, oh, my God. So all of a sudden it was like this brave new world of you can go on there and get anything you want.
There are apps. You can take a picture of your couch and, you know, upload it to an app, and within minutes you have a buyer, or you have, you know, someone who wants to take it off your hands.
So it's not just people my age. It's what it is we just have to make the effort and create the awareness.
We'll leave it there. That's Bob Shea, who's founding director of Devices for the Disabled, Jonathan Pereira, who's executive director of Plant Chicago, and Karen Weigert, who's Reset's sustainability contributor. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Great discussion. This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced and mixed by Linnea Dominic and edited by Dan Tucker. We dig deep into ways Chicagoans are creatively tackling big problems, so check out our archive at wbez.org/reset. Or consider subscribing so that you never miss an episode. Thanks for listening. We'll meet again soon.
My name is Liz, and as a teacher, I think that WBEZ provides endless sources that I can bring back to my students where they can also engage in a deeper understanding. I teach government, I teach U.S. history, and I have used sources from WBEZ in order to help enrich the understanding of my students.